Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for May's Orthopaedics Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, American European and RCVS specialist in small animal surgery, Pilar Lafuente. Thank you, Pilar. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Emma. Thank you, everyone, for coming to this webinar. Today we are going to talk about feline skull injuries. As Emma was saying, if you had any questions or if you have any questions during the talk, please type it in the box in the Q&A, and then I'll try to check it along the webinar and answer the questions. Otherwise, I will be happy to answer any questions at the end of the presentation. So, as I was saying, today we are going to talk about feline skull injuries, which actually are quite common in this species. The objectives of this lecture is to be able to perform initial management of cuts with skull fractures, and also for you to confidently diagnose feline skull injuries and make a plan for treatment. Obviously, every case is different, and sometimes we need to vary what we do, but hopefully this lecture will give you a general idea of the most common fractures and injuries in the feline skulls and what to do about them. So today I will explain a little bit of the surgical anatomy of the skull in cats. We will go over the clinical signs and diagnosis of feline skull injuries. We'll cover the initial management of these patients, and then we'll focus on mandibular and maxillary fractures, disorders of the TMJ, the temporomandibular joint, and postoperative management of these injuries. So feline skull injuries are most commonly caused by RTA and falls from a high. So these are severe traumatic events. So these skull injuries and fractures are frequently associated with other potential injuries, especially neurological and ophthalmological emergencies. So obviously, when we have a fracture in the skull, our objective is to stabilize that fracture or for that fracture to heal. But apart from the fracture to heal, the main objectives are to restore the dental occlusion and the function of the TMJ so that the cat is able to feed and groom themselves. So here we have a mandible of a cat. We have several important features. Well, we have the incisors, the canines. These are going to be important. We need to understand that the root is quite long and it reaches pretty much up to this area more or less. Then we have the premolars and the molars. And then in the bone, well, the mandible is divided into the body of the mandible and then the ramus of the mandible. It can be also called, the body may, well, mistakenly called horizontal ramus and then vertical ramus, but the correct names are the body of the mandible and the ramus of the mandible. We have several foramina where some vessels come out from the medullary canal of the mandible. We have the symphysis. We have the symphysis of the mandible that connects both hemimandibles. And then caudally, we have the condyloid process, which forms the TMJ, the temporomandibular joint. We have a couple of processes, also the coronoid process, really big, that goes medial to the zygomatic arc, and then the angular process, more ventral. It is important to realize that the mesenteric fossa is quite thin, so it cannot engage implants very well. So if we need to put any implants, and we will talk about this, we need to try to put the implants more dorsally in this ridge, in the coronoid ridge, or ventrally. In the maxilla, we have several bones form the maxilla. In general, we have the premaxilla, the maxilla, the nasal bone, and the frontal bone. All these bones in general, and the palatine bone, obviously, dorsal to the palate. We are just going to call it in general maxillary fractures, but they can involve any of these bones. So usually cats that have had a traumatic event and that develop skull injuries, 70% of cats with these skull injuries, they have other head injuries, as I was saying before. They can have nasal trauma and epistaxis, a lot of bleeding, and we will see some of the images. They can also have brain and ocular injuries. As you can see, this was a cat that was hit by a car, had a pretty severe skull injuries and had a complete extrusion of the or protrusion of the eye globe. The majority of the skull injuries involve the symphysis, so 73% of cats with skull injuries will have a symphysial fracture separation. Usually the clinical signs that they show are deformity of the mandible. They tend to keep the mouth open, they cannot eat, and they drool. They can have also pain and crepitus when we manipulate the mandible or the maxilla, depending on where the fracture is. And they may show other head trauma, like exophthalmos, if we have fractures that may affect the eye globe, or we may have a depression of the of some of the bones over the sinuses, the frontal sinuses. Also, we need to have in mind that these cats may have neurological injuries also, like this cat have like a drop ear because of some of the cranial nerve defects. So it's very important that we do, and we will go over the general physical examination to make sure that the cat is stable. But the clinical examination from the orthopedic point of view, we need to do it under sedation or under general anesthesia. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult to evaluate the extent of these fractures and luxations. And also other types of diagnosing techniques, imaging techniques. We can take radiographs. At least two views of the skull, and many times we need multiple views, like oblique fractures, to be able to see the TMJ or fractures in the caudal aspect of the mandible. So alternatively, if you have access to a CT scan, that provides a better visualization of the skull fractures. And actually, this is what I routinely do when I have a cat with the skull injuries. I directly do the CT. It's much faster, and you can see everything really nicely, all the lesions that they have. So, for example, these are radiographs of a cat with skull fractures. Here you can see in the lateral view, there's superimposition of the mandible. So there's something in here, it's not very clear, but you can maybe see, but not very clearly. In the VD view, we can see that there's malalignment and malocclusion. And here we have the coronoid process. And here you can see a little bit that there is a fracture. If you don't see it very clearly, we can you can take oblique fractures, so you can avoid the superimposition of some of the bones, especially to see the TMJ, for example, or the vulva in some cases. Here we can see that one of the mandibles, you can see much more clear than in the lateral view. So that will help us evaluate and visualize fractures in the caudal aspect of the mandible. The CT, as I was saying, is much better. It provides more detail and visualization of the fractures in the skull in cats. So, for example, this is a longitudinal cut of a CT in a cat that that had some skull injuries. You can see that there's a symphysial fracture separation, and also this is a transverse view. You can see this is the ramus of the mandible, a little bit of the zygomatic arc here, the skull, the nasopharynx, and here we can see that we have a comminuted fracture of the ramus. Probably this could have been a little bit difficult to evaluate in the radiographs. So the initial management of these cases is very important, that we don't forget that they have been involved in a traumatic event, and usually quite severe, like road traffic accidents. or falls from height. So it's very important that we perform an emergency assessment of the patient, an ABC approach, airway, breathing and circulation. We need to make sure that they are breathing, that they have a pulse. Do not focus on the obvious fracture. Sometimes, like in this cat, it's very obvious that we have a fracture. The cat is keeping the mouth open. There's some injuries also in the soft tissues, in the tongue. So it's, there's epistaxis also. So it's very obvious that this cat is going to have some fractures in the skull, but we need to put those to the side and focus on making sure that the patient is stable. As I was saying, these patients have been involved in severe trauma, and they can have other injuries that can be life-threatening, like pneumothorax or diaphragmatic hernias. So these patients, obviously, as I was saying, they need to be evaluated. Frequently, they need radiographs of the thorax, sometimes imaging of the abdomen, depending on the findings, fluids, oxygen. It's quite common with skull injuries for these animals to have epistaxis and quite a lot of bleeding in the nasal passage. So sometimes these cats can have difficulty breathing and they may need oxygen. So they may need to be placed in an oxygen cage. As I was saying, the fracture management is often delayed until we are sure that the patient is stable and we've ruled out other injuries that could be life-threatening. So very important also to provide analgesia in these patients. They have, you know, fractures, they have inflammation in the soft tissues. So it's very important that we provide analgesia, not only because of ethical reasons, but also because having inflammation and fractures and pain can take these cases into a catabolic state, and that's going to affect the immune system, the healing of bone and tissue. So it's very important that we provide analgesia. A good combination that we usually do here at the RVC is NSAIDs. The meloxicam has been approved in to be used in cats, so we usually use meloxicam and opioids, either methadone or buprenorphine. I prefer buprenorphine in cats because with the methadone, frequently they are spaced out. So I prefer buprenorphine. Obviously, the NSAIDs, if there is any signs of a shock or hypovolemia or dehydration, or the cat has any type of kidney issues, we hold on the meloxicam. We don't give them until they are well hydrated, because obviously the meloxicam can affect the kidney function if given in animals with hypovolemia or dehydration. Antibiotics, I usually give antibiotics when the fracture is open. Obviously, the mouth is not a sterile cavity, so open fractures are at increased risk of being infected. So in those cases, usually when the fracture is open and there's communication with the oral cavity, I usually give antibiotics, like Clavamox, for example. So these are just the doses that I routinely use for meloxicam. You all know this, 0.1 milligram per kilo IV, and then I decrease the dose once a day to go home. And then, as I was saying, I prefer the buprenorphine in cats because the methadone makes them dysphoric. So these are the doses that I use. I obviously adjust them depending on the response of the patient. I may need to increase the dose or decrease the dose depending on how they are doing. So once we know that the patient is stable, we perform a complete orthopedic examination. As I was saying, it's very we commonly need to put these patients under sedation or general anesthesia, so it's very important that we've made sure that these patients are stable. We need to evaluate dental occlusion, see if there's good dental occlusion or not. We need to evaluate the palate, if there is any communication between the oral and the nasal cavity. Also evaluate if the cat is able to eat or drink, so oral function, and also very important to include a neurological examination in these patients. Evaluate the cranial nerves, ocular function also, as I was saying, you know, that photo that I show with the cat with the protrusion of the eye, you know, we routinely have the ophthalmologist here have a look at the eye function, see if they have reflexes, and then if they If it doesn't look too affected, we will reposition the eye and we close the eyelid. Well, actually, the ophthalmologists do. If there's no good function of the eye, we enucleate the eye. So it's very important that these patients are able to eat. So because they have, they are going to have, well, depending on the therapy, the method of stabilization that we use, they may not be able to eat by themselves, or sometimes because they have frequently hemorrhage and bleeding in the nasal cavity, the ability to smell is impaired. So, as you know, smelling is an important factor for a cat to eat. So sometimes these cats, just because of the hemorrhage in the nasal cavity, they won't eat. So it's very frequent that we place an esophagostomy tube, as you can see here in this cat. This cat also had a skull injuries with an extrusion of the eye, had an enucleation, and during the same anesthesia, we placed an esophageal feeding tube. This happened during the weekend, and then on Monday when the cat was transferred to orthopedics, then we fix the fractures in the mandible. Very important that we evaluate for other injuries, as I was saying, like in the eye and other injuries in other limbs. If they have ocular problems, they may need to have enucleation under anesthesia. We also need to have in mind that to repair the fracture, if we end up repairing surgically that fracture, we need to put them under a general anesthesia, and we may need to intubate through, not through the mouth, but through a pharyngostomy incision for fracture repair, and I will go over this. So this is the just a picture of how to place a feeding tube. You all know this. This is just a refreshment of your memory. So you need to place the feeding tube. You need to do it in the left side of the neck where the esophagus is. So with Kelly forceps, just put through the mouth and just in the cervical aspect of the esophagus, just dorsal to the jugular, you direct the Kelly forceps outside, and just an incision is made in the skin and then the sub-Q and the esophagus, so that the tip of the forceps can just come through the incision. You grab the tube. You can use different sizes of tubes, but the most commonly used are 10 or 14 French tubes, and then you grab the tip of the tube, bring it out, then twist it, and then bring it in into the esophagus. It's very important, actually, before I forget, before you place the tube, is that you pre-measure how long this tube needs to be. The tube needs to reach up to the eighth intercostal space, so you pre-measure that so that you know how much you need to place your tube in. Once you've placed your tube in to the pre-measure distance, you just fix it to the skin with a Chinese finger trap. And obviously, it's very, very important that you take radiographs of the thorax to make sure that the tube is in the correct position, is in the esophagus, and is reaching more or less the eighth intercostal space. It's very important that this tube doesn't go into the stomach because it can cause reflux. So as I was saying, occlusion or obtaining a correct occlusion is one of the most important objectives when we are treating mandibular and maxillary fractures. And so in surgery, we need to be able to evaluate occlusion of the mouth. So sometimes it's recommended to intubate the cats through a pharyngostomy incision. In this case, it's on the right side. We usually start with a normal oral and tracheal intubation, and then we just make an incision, just caudal to the ramus of the mandible, and then with some Kelly forceps, we go and make the hole, and then we go in the opposite direction. I grab the end of the tube, in the tracheal tube that was coming out here, and then I bring it through the incision that I made. It's very important to understand that this tube is going to be folded kind of like 180 degrees, because it's going to come through this incision in the piriform fossa and then going into the trachea. So it can, if you use a normal tube, it could collapse and then the cat may not be able to breathe. So it's very important that you use a reinforced endotracheal tube. They have kind of like a metallic coil inside. I don't do it for every mandibular fracture, but if especially if I have comminuted fractures, that the only way to know if the fracture is reduced is by evaluating the dental occlusion, then I will use this alternative intubation. You can also do a tracheostomy or a tracheotomy intubation, but cat's trachea are quite small, so I wouldn't recommend it. So initially, until the fracture is repaired, while we stabilize the cat, or if it's during the weekend and then we are not going to do the surgery until Monday, usually in a limb we will put a bandage to make the cat more comfortable. In the skull is quite difficult to immobilize the fractures, so I just put it, you know, the need for immobilization in question mark. We don't usually use any type of muscle, as you can see here. If you want, you can try to use it. It's just cats, they don't have very long noses or muscles, so it's quite difficult to immobilize it. What I just wanted to make sure is that you don't use one of these covers because the cats can freak out. So if you are going to use any, just one of these that interfere the least with the vision of the cat. So once we know, you know, where the fracture is and we are ready to go to surgery, if the fracture is open, I will recommend you to place a gauze in the pharynx and then lavage the mouth as much as possible. I mean, it's not going to be a sterile surgery, but the good thing about this, the location of these fractures, is that the oral mucosa heals really fast, and the bone also on the mandible and the maxilla, it heals pretty fast. So in spite of being open fractures, they don't get really nasty infections. I routinely do give antibiotics, but just try to keep the mouth as clean as possible. So this is what I usually do. I place the gauze in the pharynx. Obviously, the cat is intubated, and then I lavage the mouth to clean as much as possible. Depending on where the fracture is, we may do an approach in the ventral aspect of the mandible if the fracture is in the body of the mandible. So in this case, we are not going through the mouth, but as you can see, the mouth is in our surgical field, so it's not going to be a completely sterile surgery. So I routinely give antibiotics during the surgery and then postoperatively for a few days. So now we are going to go through the different injuries that we may have. We are going to start with the mandibular fractures. The most common, as I was saying before, are the symphyseal separation in more than 17% of these skull injuries. We can also have fractures in the body of the mandible or in the ramus of the mandible. So the treatment that we choose for mandibular fracture can be conservative or a surgical treatment, and it's going to depend on several factors. One of the most important ones is if we have a normal occlusion or not, and if the fracture is stable or not. There are some fractures that are more stable than others. Here we have two fractures in the body of the mandible. This one in this direction from dorsocaudal to rostrodistal or ventral are more stable than in the opposite direction, because we are going to have a pull from the muscles here. So in this fracture, this in the orientation, when we have fractures in this direction, the tension of the muscles tend to close actually the fracture, while if we have the fracture in the opposite direction, when we have pull of the muscles, it tends to open the fracture. So this one is more unstable than this one. So if we have a fracture in a cat and we have normal occlusion, it's a relatively stable fracture, the cat is not very painful, is actually eating, and is a fracture that is close, we can treat it conservatively. However, if we have malocclusion, we have fractures that are more unstable and especially open fractures, then we tend to go to surgery, but we'll go through them. So when we have a symphyseal separation, this is, as I was saying, the most common injury in the skull, is most commonly caused by falls from a height, and we tend to, or the recommendation is to treat them surgically. Actually, the surgery is quite easy. You can treat it with a, well, this is the aspect of a symphyseal separation. You can separate the both hemimandibles, and the surgical treatment involves cerclage wire encircling both of the hemimandibles, caudal to the canine tooth. Other options are using a hemicerclage, a screw, and we need to make sure that by using these techniques, we don't have any motion dorsoventral, and these implants are routinely removed after 6 weeks. So the most common technique that I use is the encircling cerclage. It's very easy to do. You just use a large gauze needle. I make an incision just in the ventral aspect of the skin in the mandible. I put the needle very close to the mandible, lateral to the mandible through the periosteum, and it's coming out here in the gingiva, and then I place the cerclage wire, usually like a 0.6 or 0.8 millimeter wire. I would recommend you not to use a very small cerclage wire, because I've seen some people using very small cerclage wires and the mandible still has some motion. So I usually use 0.8 or 1 millimeter cerclage wire. So you feed one of the ends of the circular wire through the needle until it comes out through the skin, and then you take out the needle and you redirect the needle in the same way through the other side. You feed it the other end of the circular. You feed it through the needle until both ends of the circular wire comes out through the skin, and then you make the twist and cut the twist. I don't usually bend this twist, and I keep it protruding so it's easier to remove. Other options are, especially for revision surgery, for example, or if you have a more complex fracture, you can use a hemicerclage or a screw, and just caudal to the canine teeth. And these implants, the cerclage wire is removed 4 to 6 weeks after surgery. Very easily, I place the animal on heavy sedation or under general anesthesia, and I just cut the cerclage wire in the mouth. I strengthen the cerclage wire, and then I just pull from the twist carefully. So other mandibular fractures that we may have are the mandibular body fractures. So as I was explaining before, we need to decide if the fracture is relatively stable, like this one, this configuration, or relatively unstable. We also need to evaluate the occlusion of the mouth and see if it's unilateral or bilateral to make a decision whether we treat it conservatively or we treat it surgically. So if we treat it conservatively, let's say that we have a relatively stable fracture, there's good occlusion, and it's only unilateral, maybe we can treat it conservatively. Conservative treatment includes soft food for around 4-6 weeks, no toys that the cat can chew, exercise restriction, cold packs if the cat allows it, and a recheck in 4-6 weeks and evaluate how the cat is doing and how the radiography is healing. If the fracture is more unstable and there's malocclusion, etc., we can treat it surgically. Usually the approach is ventral. You can see here we have the animal in dorsal recumbency, and we just make an incision ventral to the mandible. This is the gastricus muscle, and then directly we have the mandible. So we can use several techniques depending on the configuration of the fracture. If it's a fracture that is relatively stable and is simple, we can use interfragmentary wiring, which is just involves making tunnels with a small drill bit in both sides of the fracture, and just passing a small circular wire. So what I would recommend, I have a photo here. So this is what it involves. So we have the fracture here. We just make a tunnel, another tunnel, and we place a cerclage wire. Here, I will recommend you to make this tunnels a little bit oblique. So this is the aorta side, and this is the lateral side of the mandible. I would recommend you to do these tunnels a little bit oblique so that it's easier to pass the cerclage wire and find it through the by opening the fracture. Otherwise, if you do it perfectly parallel, you may have problems finding the cerclage wire. So usually, so the tension side of the mandible is close to the teeth. So definitely, we need to put a an interfragment wire close to the teeth. Just make sure that you don't damage the root. And then, depending on the size of the fracture and how stable it is, we may put a second one a little bit more ventral. If we have, we can also use a plate, like a very small plate, like 1.5 millimeter a plate. There are some mini plates used for human hand fracture, so you can use one of those. Very important that you place it in the tension side, so the dorsal side of the mandible. If you have a more complex fracture, like a comminuted fracture, you may need to use bigger plates, like a 2 millimeter DCP or even locking plates. In those cases, because the implants are bigger, the only option is to put it more ventral, so there's less risk of damaging the root of the teeth. Other options are using an external fixator. I usually use an external fixator when I have comminuted fractures. Here you have, this was a paper published in 2004, and it's in dogs, but it can also be used in cats. So it depending on the configuration of the fracture, you use different configuration of ESFs. So for example, if you have a fracture just in one of the hemimandibles, you can use just a type 1 external fixator. As you can see here, if it's bilateral, you can use both sides with the pins crossing bilaterally, rostrally. Try not to pass or to put the pins through one side to the other side more caudal, because you will affect the tongue and the muscles ventral to the tongue. So only the more rostral pins can be put through one side to the other side in the mandible. If you have comminuted fractures, you can place a bilateral external fixators and some of the pins are coming rostrally. And if you have a rostral fracture, you can use this configuration for the fracture. Very important, especially with comminuted fractures, is to evaluate and have a an adequate dental occlusion after surgery. So for the external fixator, I would recommend you to use epoxy putty. It's really easy to use. You just mix the both components and then apply it, connecting all the pins that you've placed, and it gets hard. And it's not as heavy as trying to put clamps and connecting bars. So it's actually really nice to use in mandibular fractures. If you have rostral fractures, as we have here, like just caudal to the canines, you can use some, really in cats, you cannot use the interdental wiring, because that means using a wire just around the teeth. It's just, these teeth are really small in cats. So what you need to use is a modified interdental wiring, as you can see here. With a small K wire, you can just drill small tunnels in the mandible, and then in the rostral mandible, you pass the cerclage wire through, and then you just create this type of configuration, and you just twist it. This is the modified interdental wiring. You can also use like a lingual arc, as you can see here, with a bar bend following the shape of the mandible, and then some cerclage wires. But I think this is a little bit more complex. So you can use this modified interdental wiring or an external fixator if you want. So what if you have mandibular fractures in the ramus of the mandible? So the good thing is that they have a good muscle coverage that stabilizes the fracture. We have all the masseter muscle in here. The problem is that, as I was saying before, this fossa has really thin bone, so there's no very good bone purchase by the implants. So usually when we have caudal fractures, if the dental occlusion is good and the movement of the mouth is good, we treat it conservatively. If you have a simple fracture or you are concerned about the occlusion, you can put a small plate, like a mini plate. Just make sure that you put it rostral, just under the coronoid crest, as I was saying before. You can also put it a little bit ventral, where the bone is thicker. Here you can see an image. This cat had a caudal fracture in the ramus of the mandible, so we like through here. So we placed a mini plate and actually a lag screw, because it was an oblique fracture. Other options, especially if you have a comminuted fracture in the caudal aspect of the mandible, in the ramus of the mandible, that can compromise occlusion, then surgical treatment is warranted. The treatment, the recommended treatment, is to immobilize the maxilla and the mandible. How can you do that? You can place wires between the maxilla and the mandible, just between the premolars and the molars. Drill some tunnels in the maxilla and the mandible and put some cerclage wires. I would recommend you to do bilaterally, so that it's more stable. That will prevent the cat from opening the mouth, and that will stabilize the fractures in the caudal aspect of the mandible. Another option, which is the one that I usually do, is to place an external fixator that is immobilizing the mouth. So I place one pin, both caudal to the canine, but one pin just dorsal to the palate and another pin in the mandible, and I connect it with epoxy putty. It's very important. You can use also dental bonding. As you can see here, you need to have some equipment for dental treatment. It's very important that when you use this interarcoid immobilization, either wires, ESF, or dental bonding, it's important that you leave the mouth a little bit open so that the cat can lick at some liquid food. And also if there is any problems in the nose, because they have hemorrhage in the and bleeding in the nasal cavity, so that they can breathe through the mouth. In spite of leaving this slightly open, it's very important, and we routinely put a feeding tube. If we place the feeding tube and then the cat is able to lick food and maintain their needed, their requirements, then you know you can pull the O tube at any time. If the cat is not be able to feed himself, then you feed them through the O tube. So we usually, when we immobilize the maxilla and the mandible, we routinely place a feeding tube. Another technique that has been reported is this encircling device, the bird, which as you can see here is just a nylon suture on top of the maxilla and then lateral to the mandible, and just comes out in the middle of the mandible through the skin. But with this technique, you need to keep the mouth completely close so that it is stable. And actually what I found is that this nylon tends to move. At least that's my experience in the cases that I've used it. So I prefer to use the external fixator. So this is what I was saying, that you need to leave the mouth a little bit open, around 1 centimeter. Make sure that you place a feeding tube. And these cases, especially during the recovery time after anesthesia, because they cannot open the mouth, it's very important that they are monitored very closely, so that if there is any signs of nausea or vomiting, there has to be someone there that can cut the pins to be able to open the mouth of the cat. Otherwise, if they vomit, although they have the mouth a little bit open, it's not wide enough, and they can aspirate the vomit and have an aspiration pneumonia. So usually what I do is I have a diagram close to the cage of the cat, where I can tell the nurses where the pins are, and in case of an emergency they know where to cut the pins, and I have some wire cutters close to the cage in the cat. Do this treatment, as I was saying before, you need to have some equipment for the treatment of the teeth. So it's up to the surgeon, really. So, for example, this is a cat, the CT of a cat that had a comminuted fracture in the ramus of the mandible and also a fracture in the TMJ. This cat was treated conservatively. We place an external fixator to immobilize the maxilla and the mandible. And I just wanted to show you more or less where the pins were going through. So this is just dorsal to the palate and then through the mandible, caudal to the canine. So this ESF immobilizes the mouth so that it gives the mandible time to heal. This is the aspect of the cat. As you can see, the cat is with the mouth a little bit open. If I lifted the lips, you could see that it's around 1 centimeter or so open. And as you can see, the cat has the O2 placed. This is a CT performed, I think it was 3 weeks after surgery. You can see that the cat is still forming some callus. Well, there's some bone healing of the mandible, and we still have here the TMJ fracture. So usually, the external fixator, you don't need to wait until the fracture is completely healed. As you can see, as long as you can see some signs of healing and the fracture feels stable, you can remove the external fixator. I usually remove it at around 3 weeks or so, although it can be left longer depending on the complexity of the fracture. So now we are going to go through with the maxillary fractures. We can have a traumatic split palate or fractures of the rest of the bones in the incisive, nasal, maxillary, and zygomatic bones. This is a CT of a cat. You can see that there is a fracture of the palatine bone, causing also, well, a defect also in the palate, in the soft tissue. So there's communication between the nasal cavity and the mouth. And I wanted to mention, actually, I've been talking about, nasal bleeding and the inability of cats to smell food. So this is how it looks to have bleeding in the nasal cavity with a CT. So if you have a traumatic, well, the traumatic split palate usually happens after falls from a high, and it there is a separation of the palatine bone and also the palate, either the hard palate or the soft palate, and there's communication between the oral and the nasal cavity. It can be treated conservatively if the defect is relatively small, as you can see here, and the fracture is stable. So if you manipulate both sides of the maxilla, there's no gross mandible, there's no gross movement between both sides of the maxilla. In those cases, you can treat it conservatively, but it's very important that you assess the patient in 5 or 7 days to evaluate how the cat is eating and evaluate this defect and make sure that it's healing. If there's no healing of the soft tissues, then you need to do surgery and close that defect. Surgical treatment usually is recommended when we have bigger defects in the soft tissues and also an unstable fracture. So usually those fractures affect a longer portion of the palatine bone. And if you manipulate the maxilla, there's instability between the right and the left sides. And the defect, as I was saying, is bigger. So the treatment is surgical. You need to apply compression. You can use some pointed reduction forceps to reduce the fracture, and then apply fragmentary pin just between the premolar and the molar, and then a circlass wire that is inside of the mouth. So the pin is through the bone, but from both sides of the gingiva, and then the circlass wire is inside of the mouth, just around the ends of the tip. Very important that you close, obviously, the soft tissues. I would recommend you to do it in a couple of layers to decrease the risk of dehiscence, but you need to warn the owners that there is a risk of for the wound to open and dehisce. These implants are usually removed in around 6 weeks. So this is, for example, the aspect of a cat with a split palate. In this case, the defect was not massive, was not very, very big. Sometimes it goes all the way along the palate, but in this case was big enough, and actually both sides of the maxilla were unstable. So we placed, there is a, a pin here that you can only see the edges or the ends of the pins, and then the circular wire. This is the, and obviously you need to take radiographs postoperatively. This cat had a split palate and mandibular symphyseal separation. So you can see all the implants here. Other maxillary fractures that we can have can affect the incisive, the nasal, maxillary, and zygomatic bones. These are usually minimally displaced, so the majority of times they can be treated conservatively. It's very important that with the cat under anesthesia that you manipulate the maxilla. If there is instability in the maxilla, it means that there's not only a fracture in the maxilla and the palatine bones, but also in the nasal bones. So if they are unstable and there's malocclusion, then surgery needs to be done to stabilize the fragments, and usually really tiny plates can be used. And usually the approach to that area is under the oral mucosa, but I would say that the majority of times they can be treated conservatively. Now we are going to go with the TMJ, the temporomandibular joint. Here we can have fractures and luxations of the TMJ, we can have ankylosis, or we can have the locking jaw syndrome. So here we have a CT, this is a transverse view of a cat with a TMJ fracture, as you can see here. First I'm going to go with the luxation. The most common direction of the luxation of the TMJ is craniodorsal, as you can see here, although it can also be luxated caudal, but the most common is a craniodorsal. We can have a unilateral luxation or a bilateral luxation. If we have a unilateral luxation, what happens is that the mandible is deviated towards the other side where the luxation is. So if you have the luxation on the left and it's a craniodorsal luxation, you are going to have deviation of the mandible towards the right. And if you have a bilateral luxation, craniodorsal, what you are going to have is rostral translation of the mandible. So usually these animals are treated by close reduction under GA. So what you need to do, so here we have really nice photos. So you can use one of those wooden hexagonal pencils, and you just put them under or between the molars. You use this pencil as kind of like leverage and close the mouth. So what you are trying to do is you are trying to distract and or displace ventrally the TMJ. Once the TMJ is ventral, then we use the pencil and rotate it in this direction so that we reduce the luxation, as you can see here. So once it's reduced, the mouth needs to be immobilized for 1 or 2 weeks. If this is a simple luxation, you can just use a muscle, that's enough. If you have luxation and fractures, then you may need to use one of those interarcoid immobilization techniques like an ESF. So we can also have fractures, as I was showing you before, fractures of the TMJ. They are usually minimally displaced, and they usually affect the medial aspect of the TMJ, so they are quite difficult to fix surgically. So if the oral occlusion is good, we tend to treat them conservatively with a soft food for around 4 weeks. Obviously, if the TMJ fracture is associated with other fractures in the mandible or the maxilla, you may need to put an interarcoid external fixator, for example. If you have malocclusion, then you are going to need to use interarcoid immobilization, as I was saying, or if you have any other fractures. In some cases, you may need to do an excisional arthroplasty if it's a comminuted fracture, although this is not very common. Or, for example, after conservative treatment, if the animal develops osteoarthritis and ankylosis, you may need to do an excisional arthroplasty. So the approach is just ventral to the zygomatic arc. You just elevate a little bit the masseteric muscle, and then you just reach the joint and do an excisional arthroplasty. Another pathology that we may have in the TMJ is ankylosis of this joint. It's a chronic and debilitating problem because it decreases the range of motion of the mouth, and is usually a progressive decrease in the range of motion. And some dogs, by the end, they can hardly move the mouth, so they may have problems eating and grooming. We can classify ankylosis in two types. The true ankylosis is more common in cats and is usually secondary to a problem in the TMJ. So the origin is really a problem in the TMJ, like trauma, fractures, osteoarthritis. False ankylosis is usually due to increase in fibrosis and bone growth in the periarticular tissue, like the zygomatic arc, etc. And sometimes they just combine one with the other. It can be unilateral or bilateral, and as I was saying, sometimes it can cause minimal movement of the joint. It's very, as I was saying, for anything, for diagnostic imaging of the skull, I would recommend you to do a CT if you have the option of doing a CT, because it gives you a better visualization of the injuries. So the treatment, conservative treatment, has been reported. It includes physiotherapy, opening and closing the mouth several times a day to trying to increase the range of motion, and administration of steroids, but usually is unsuccessful. So once you get to the point where you have an ankylosis and really decreased range of motion, you need to do surgical treatment. And that involves excisional arthroplasty, as I was saying before, and sometimes, depending on the involvement of the surrounding tissues, you may need to also do excisional or excision of the surrounding tissues, like the zygomatic arc. And very important after surgery is to perform physiotherapy to increase the range of motion in these patients. And finally, the last disorder of the TMJ that we are going to see is the locking jaw syndrome. This syndrome is due to impingement of the mandibular coronary process on the zygomatic arc. So this process usually goes medial to the zygomatic arc, and when it goes lateral, it gets locked, and it makes the cat having a maximal opening on the jaw. This caused quite a lot of distress, not only to the cat, but also to the owners, because the cat starts meowing and they try to, touch the mouth with the paw. So it could be quite distressing. So this is the, it happens after maximal opening of the jaw, like, for example, after yawning. So sometimes this coronoid process can go lateral to the zygomatic arc, and then it gets locked in that position. So it's been overrepresented in Persian cats. So it's probably due to some anatomical changes in this breed. They have a shorter nose, and probably some anatomical changes in that area of the mandible. So it's been overrepresented in this breed. The treatment is close reduction. The cats need to be placed under general anesthesia, and once they are under anesthesia, you need to open the mouth farther and then apply medial pressure with your thumb over the coronary process of the mandible, of the ramus of the mandible, to try to put the mandible, the coronary process, again medial to the zygomatic arc. If you cannot reduce the mandible close, or you have a reluxation, you may need to do surgical treatment. In those cases, you approach the zygomatic arc. Here we have the masseter muscle. We just make an incision in here, and then we can either rongeur away the part of the zygomatic arc that impinge with the coronoid process, or we can also do an osteotomy of the coronoid process. as you can see here. So even if we've reduced the luxation of the mandible during surgery, it's very important that we try to reluxate it, or at least try to see the area that is impinging with the mandible, so that we know which part of the zygomatic arc to remove. And as I was saying, sometimes you can also need to remove part of the coronoid process of the mandible. Post-op management of skull fractures is exercise restriction for around 6 to 8 weeks. Nutritional support, very important. If the cat is not able to feed by himself and we are using a feeding tube, we need to make sure that we are fulfilling all the requirements that they have to give the food through the feeding tube, usually like an AD or clinic care food you can give through the esophageal tube. Rechecks every 4 to 6 weeks until the bone is healed. And if we've placed an external fixator, obviously we need to take care of the external fixator, like cleaning, etc., because it tends to get really filthy with saliva and the drooling and a little bit of food. If even postoperatively we have some malocclusion still, sometimes we need to do treatment of the canines. We need to do a root canal treatment and then cut the canine short, or sometimes we need to remove the canine. Otherwise, it gets it can go into the gingiva of the mouth because of the malocclusion. So in summary, the skull is a common site of fracture in cats. It's very important that we evaluate the patient to make sure it's stable, because they have sustained a quite severe trauma. We need to plan carefully. We need to evaluate the fractures that we have, the occlusion and the stability of the fractures to plan how to treat these fractures, and very important that we restore an adequate occlusion. Also, just make sure that you warn the owners regarding future ankylosis of the TMJ joint if there is a fracture in that joint. Here you have some further reading if you want. This is a nice book about orthopedic surgery in cats, and includes a really nice chapter, and then orthopedic books approach, and then a few papers of head trauma in the cat, maxillomandibular external fixator for caudal jaw trauma, or the diagnostic yield of conventional radiographs and CT in dogs and cats with maxillofacial trauma. So I think this is what I wanted to say today about feline skull injuries. So if anyone has any questions, I will be happy to answer. So one question that we have here is, so what do you do if you have, like in the CT that you showed, that cat with the comminuted fracture in the caudal aspect of the mandible and the TMJ. I mean, the fracture in the mandible was healing, the TMJ was not really healing. So what do you do in those cases? So I have to say that in the cases that we've seen with TMJ fractures, we haven't done anything. We've treated conservatively, either conservatively completely or with an external fixator through the maxilla and the mandible, because the animals had other fractures. And I haven't had any problems with this cat coming back with ankylosis of the TMJ. So I think the risk of ankylosis is not that high. It's possible, but I would say that the majority of cats actually do well. So we haven't had to do an excisional arthroplasty in those cats. So I don't think it gives a lot of problems. They usually do okay. Any more questions? So a question about the interarcuate external fixators that we use is, so what happens if you leave the mouth more or less open than 1 centimeter. So as I was saying before, if you close the mouth completely, the cats may have problems breathing because there's bleeding in the nasal cavity. And also if they have any issues, you know, if they are trying to vomit, they can actually aspirate because they cannot open the mouth. So it's very important that you leave it open. I usually leave it around 1 centimeter, which is the size of an endotracheal tube. Sometimes I intubate through the piriform fossa. Sometimes I just leave the tube through the mouth. So it's more or less that size. There has to be some superimposition of the tips of the canines. You need to be careful also if you leave the mouth more open than you should. I had a patient, unfortunately, that I leave it a tiny bit more open. There was still superimposition of the canines, but maybe it was a little bit more than 1 centimeter. And that cat drooled quite a lot. And I mean, that's not a big issue, but for the owners was an issue because it was drooling all over and the cat wanted to sleep in bed with the owner. So they had, you know, a hard time. But finally, you know, everything went well. I was able to remove the external fixator 3 weeks after surgery and that was all. But just so you know that they drool quite a lot if you leave it too open. So that can be quite distressing for the owners, or an inconvenient for the clients. Any more questions? So, well, I hope this lecture has been useful for you, and thank you very much for your attention, and have a good day. I'm going to leave you with Emer.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Pilar for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.